European Privacy Act, which was actually shelved.
As a story.
And I mean, the Cyber Resilience Act is about, let's say, information security. It's not about cryptography, but it's about information management. I mean, it's something which is relevant for anybody who has a, in this company, some kind of a security officer who is responsible for all of the IT systems, and they have to do things if they have offerings. I mean, and it's something which is very relevant for anybody who has a, let's say, Navi server based web service. I mean, it's the same way relevant for anybody who has a Apache based web service or a Nginx based web service, but it's simply as soon as you provide services, you have certain responsibilities there, and the responsibility grow if you're a company, and is even higher if you embed system in your own products as a something like an appliance. You have some new stuff built there, and you're responsible afterwards for even more. And what's actually important there is, I mean, it's about, let's say, how can an owner of the system do something about this? I mean, you have a website, and there is an attack, and using the technology, and it is hacked. What you're doing? What is your process? Who is responsible for this? I mean, you might send a bug report to the vendor and say, please fix this, and it's not clear what happens afterwards. And it's the same thing with open source software there. You should, let's say, operate, proof, and update your environment, and this is somewhat different in the open source world than in the non-open source world. And actually, there is something like three important parts here. One thing is this so-called inventory. What are you actually running there? I mean, an inventory is, a Navi server is not enough. I mean, you should track this down, in the best case, to the patch, to the commit ID. I mean, certainly one level is the patch level, but you also see on this level, just on this place. But not only about Navi server, also about your database connection, or about the Tickle version, or the stuff from the Tickle library you're putting in, or the Navi server modules. And therefore, this inventory should say, what exactly are you running? Because it will figure out that on some of this component, there might be some security flaw, and you have to fix it. And you should show afterwards that you have fixed it, and in your version you're running, it's gone then. I mean, the question how easy it is for larger, let's say, IT administrators is not so easy. But it's something which this act more or less does. And it is about knowing what was running there. I mean, just put the Navi server version commit modules and the dependencies is also OpenSSL. There are fixes from all sides. There's database stuff. There's OS dependencies. And from this, you should build this software bill of materials. I mean, it's just the supply chain attacks were in the press over the last, let's say, couple of years, where you are using some technology which pulling other technologies, and that's breaking the whole system, and you should do something about this. And having first an inventory of what you're doing there is the first step. And the next thing is, more or less, if there are problems, do something with this. I mean, hardening at a full place up to whatever, handling all of this security issues, this is a life cycle. What you should do afterwards, after you have more or less getting some kind of a bug report, or some crawler is detecting an error, or some whatever security software is in, patch, backport, sign, deploy is normally the process that you should do there. Whatever sign means afterwards is in the, it's not saying in the standard anything, and there's therefore some kind of a way how is error reporting done. I mean, it's also depending on what kind of site you're having is, you might have to report your finding or a security flaw also to the CVE, global repository, to say, well, there is a bug, and you should also notify other users of these components. Please be aware that there's a bug. I mean, this is the story about this Resilience Act and why it's important here. I mean, this is more or less It started already a couple of years ago, it was just published there. But in September this year, these reporting obligations, they are starting. That means we have now a situation, I mean, we're talking here about the EU. I mean, if you are, let's say, outside of the EU, it's different rules, but if you're Poland is used, then it's also the same thing. And then it's getting also afterwards, let's say, more complicated again in the next years. And I mean, in general, non-commercial open source projects are outside of these obligations, but the people using it, they have the obligations. And the question at the end is, what can we do as an open source software provider to ease the life of the people having the problems afterwards to deal with this? This is more or less the big challenge that we are facing and why it's coming up here, and also affecting the same way, let's say, digital components and other things. I mean, it's just, we should provide means to give something into the hand of the users, of the application developers at the end, to provide something. And I mean, we have something of this already implemented in some ways, but not completely and not to the last level. I mean, it starts with simple things in Navi server. In every instance, you have this NSTATS module, and you can pin down, this is the exact version I'm using. And this is more or less getting to the patch level. Yeah, it's just, there's an ID string, and it says, this is this version with exactly this patch afterwards is running there and whatever. It's just the first step, and it's also running there what kind of compiler is used there, it might be also relevant there, and what kind of things of compiler flags are used there. I mean, it's not only the version, it might be affected by if you have certain features there turned on or turned off. And also here going to the detail version, not sufficiently detailed for the support, but it's a first step. And in OpenACS we have more of this stuff. I mean, I have here on the right side just made an active check of OpenACS site. I mean, it's running there Postgres version 17, which is not so bad. And there's a server version and a client version. You have two different ways to interact. There's the database running and you have the client library. Both of them might have security flaws. And what this stuff on OpenACS does is just gets the both versions, goes to the Postgres site live more or less, gets the bug reports from there, and figures out when is the thing fixed. And it says here there are a couple of look, there's you're using here this version, and it has in this case here 6 security flaws, and they are fixed. You should upgrade here the database version to this versions where these bugs are fixed actually. But it's just the database level. It's just one part, and it's also other things there. It's for example about JavaScript libraries. It's a fixed source of problems there, and this certain site is using here. It's just a small part of the list here, it's just a few components, and here's the installed version, and they get check marks here, and I mean the first one has actually security flaws, it's a CK editor, it's just barely used in places, but it has known problems actually, and if you click on the things, I can't do it here, you get to the actual report there, and it says actually these components are up to date, and for these versions, there are newer versions available. And if there's a flaw, you get here a red icon, and you can click on the red icon, and you see what's actually broken there. I mean, this is just JavaScript, database, Navi server, and you should do have this in all components. I mean, just something where, and I think it's a challenge. And it is not the case that if you have a security flaw, everything is broken, everything is down. It's at the end some kind of a question, what does it mean for the enterprise? And if you look at our university, we have there, don't know, 100 services using, let's say, 1,000 components. And but I mean, the point is that if you are in a bad situation, it might be an argument why some security administrators, which are not very technical, I think, say, you got a security level 7 here, and it's just a is already very bad, and you must understand we cannot run the software anymore because there are security flaws and you have to fix it. And sometimes it's very hard because there are more components afterwards around this. This means this is also something which means we have to work on also from the Navi server side. I mean, we have some good tracking here on the server side, but for example, not on the Navi server modules. I mean, it's not hard to provide exact reporting what version you're running, but there are 60 whatever different modules out there, maybe more. Therefore, it is some work to get this more or less aware, to get the right thing. And we are using TTLib, and it's the level of detail reporting is an issue. I mean, nobody is killed at this time when it's not perfect, but it's something where we should actually improve them in the future. Just raising the awareness that is coming soon, that there will be some kind of a need for reporting. What I've not shown here is that a couple of formats there, what you should provide, what happens in an incident case, whom to report there, which has also bad sides. I've added some such a site on the OpenSS side, and the first thing they were attracted on is bounty hunters. I said, I found here a security bug there, and fix it, and only later give me some money for this because I've pointed you to a big problem and so on. I mean, it's the world and one has to deal with this, and it's just a question, is this also exploited by other people at the same time? And everybody who is running larger services, and I'm just looking here at you at universities, they have the problem, and it's something which is serious and you can't ignore it. So they say this way. The next slide I have here is about, let's say, this collected wishes of the last year's conference, and there are a couple of things which were the wishes expressed here were turning into changes of the Navi server implementation, and I haven't covered them in my presentation, which just showing the highlights there, but it's something like handling, let's say, private keys in certificates. I mean, there are different ways how OpenACS accepts private keys for the server. It has to sign something. It can be even part of the certificate, or it can be a separate file. If it is part of the certificate, the problem is that you have to protect the certificate, either with a password for the secret there, and Navi server supports ways to get to the password, and or make sure that nobody else can read the thing, and they can set file system permissions. But this is a weak way, and no security people will be happy with this. You need better ways. And actually, there were also some discussions in the Navi server forums that it should be split into different files, and now we have split this into different ways. We have also ways of integrating these password managers also up to the private keys of the repository, which just you can use afterwards, whatever, the Azure Key Vault or AWS Secrets Manager, and get the keys from there, and you don't store it in the system at all, but you get them online on the flight and just using it afterwards on the flight, this data. I think this were the most important, let's say, stuff from the wishes of last year. I mean, the other question is certainly more wishes. I mean, it's always very hard if you're in a situation and ask, what do you wish? Normally, you find your wishes out if you develop some code and you find some kind of limitation, and then it's a more natural way to say, I don't know how this works, and please, if you find things where you don't know how it works, it might be the case that it's something that is not good documented. It means for me a challenge to improve documentation, or something might be missing as a feature or an easy usable feature. I mean, young or just new users of Navi server are very useful because they point to these places much more than the experienced users, which know the things around history. That means
I can agree that the documentation for MS ConChan has improved a lot.
I mean, for many things, I'm trying to do it on many things, but there's a lot of documentation there, and it's a lot of work to update this, and life is short, and it's very hard to go through every command from systematically and say, I want to improve the documentation of this, because it's sometimes good enough already this way, and sometimes it needs some more rework. And I think also the documentation really helped from this, say, repository style of the parameters, because it was also quite inconsistent on different pages, where the parameter was referenced on what are the values you provide, what are the default values. All of this is now machine-readable and generated, so quality automatically goes up. It's also something which I think would be a good idea for the digital documentation, but that's our story. just from your side, is something where you have the feeling this is a blind spot in Argus Server, or something where, I mean, John has already mentioned a few things to me which are not so easy to solve actually for getting, let's say, password attacks. And we have certainly mechanisms there also in OpenSS for handling of this, but it's very different if you have a public vector with paid services and user IDs over university with students, where in the worst case the students know something will be bad for them if they're doing password attacks and they track down. And because they have not normally starting the Azure cloud to come with thousands of different password attempts and small things, but real world application gets this. Oh yeah, just starting here first with Antonio. Yeah?
Something I didn't test yet, but I could ask you about it. Is the behavior of Navi Server, the container version of Navi Server, concerning rootless environments? And nowadays it's becoming a trend for many providers of containerized applications to offer also a version that works without privileges. Is it something that is already there, or is it on the radar?
Rootless, you mean not jailed root directory, but about a version which is not
the
required.
User is running on the application, won't be root, and won't have privileges on the port, for instance, when you're talking Kubernetes.
I mean, the Navi server is also in the Docker containers, it's not running as root, but it's running on a NSAdmin user.
Okay.
Therefore, it's not there.
But it's usually starting as root, so it
but
can assign port 80 and port 4043.
But it's fair to think if you're starting as root, it says afterwards you can do this, but it says afterwards it doesn't continue afterwards with this.
And it drops the root privilege.
It says I don't start with this. I think it started with Navi Server 5, but that it doesn't allow you to start with this. But you can provide the username afterwards, and the way how it works, the first step is running afterwards as root. As soon as the ports are bound, it switches back to the other root. There are actually also other ways for Docker containers, especially for getting this binding to privileged ports, but I've not come yet.
There's a little feature that I used in a different context. As a root, you make a touch on a file in some special directory.
Exactly.
If it's permissions, and then a particular user was named is
fine. That's a special version for Linux, and this version can only be used afterwards in the Docker container, because the main thing
is
Linux, but it's also not working the same way in other environments. Therefore, it can be improved there, but I mean the application, when it starts up and listens on sockets afterwards, it's not running on root anymore.
With respect to rootless, I can't imagine that it's not possible to run it in a rootless container.
I have not tested yet, but I'm trying to.
My input was unlocking. The locks are very good.
Locking with a G or with a CK?
With a G.
Locking. Because there was always a question about locking.
No. The log files, it's called. It's very abundant and sometimes not very consistent. I believe in order to.
You mean the system lock? Or
the system.
I mean, we have the HTTP log, we have the SMTP log,
yes,
the access log.
Yes.
And we have all of them. We can have multiple logs of this.
Yes.
But the system log is more or less the chatty one. Yeah?
Yes. This one. And the problem is not this programmer, so it's this consistent style and machine readability. So you can filter important stuff apart in a simple way. So I think that's similar to documentation. It just you need a convention how to do it, adapt what is here, and also nudge new developers of libraries or so to use the same style, so that if you have a big server, you can really handle the
It's a long story, and there are many also rules what should be used. But also, it's not only the Navi service doing it, but applications doing it.
Applications.
And this more or less adds up at the end.
There
are guidelines what should be done, let's say, as a notice, what should be a warning, what should be an error, how to deal with these cases, actually. And the next thing is afterwards, or how to deal with deprecated thing. But this is also improving there. There are on severity levels which are going to this. Mm-hmm. And then there's a string at the end, and all of this can be improved. But it's something where it's a long story. I don't have to go with this.
So maybe we can do this already, but I do something that's really not secure when I move stuff from my desktop Navi server to production. I tail the log file into a file that the server has access to so that my AI can watch the log on the server. And I basically put a background process in that just says, watch my Navi server log for anything in the log that is related to what I'm working on. The problem, obviously, is that file becomes huge. And if it's tailing it, it's fine. But if I restart my AI, it now is huge. I don't know if there could be a way to just have a stream, essentially. So when you connect to it, it just streams the log. And it's obviously password protected in some way. You see that my goal is to have an AI be able to basically analyze what's going on my production server.
I mean, there are different issues. I mean, regression is a lot of data. I mean, this is certainly true.
Yes.
But it doesn't get less data if you have different means to get the same data.
No. It's not that. It's the problem is that if you do a tail, then the file is huge, and if you start with new, you see the log starting from yesterday. In other words, the AI should be able to just say, show me the log right now as it's happening. So it does something, and then it can see the log on the server. Does that make sense?
Not completely, but you want to see the last 5 minutes or something like this.
Just
like
a streaming log.
Just a streaming log, essentially.
So every live viewer, every viewer.
I mean, we have
the logging options. I mean, it's logging to a file, which is the standard thing. But also you can log to syslog. I mean, you get different machines, whatever is running, and patch everything into this. You can log to a proc. I mean, it's your control afterwards what to do this and write to a file or do something else. I mean,
right. So I could just have it go to a proc and then basically flush constantly.
Exactly. Or I send it.
Or just use the AI analyzer as a proc.
just select something from the thing.
While we're still talking about logging, if you echo an issue, which is the engineers in my team and myself, in breaking bad habits of using NSLog Notice solely and not taking advantage of all of the log levels.
Yeah.
So that's a pain point for us. But I have always been curious on the API-doc. There's a switch up at the top for any procedure you look at. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Looking at the source code.
Yes.
Yeah.
The debug switch.
I didn't know what that switch was for.
I see it's a debug switch.
It's a debug switch. So If I turn that on,
you get more log entries.
I get what?
More log entries.
But at what log level will expose that?
The internal. If the actual internal process has hit this.
No. This one's just for the proc. Each time the proc is called and it's exit. It's just logging this single proc. I mean, for every proc, you can say log this extra to the log file.
As an NSLog notice level, or at a debug level, or
I think on a debug level.
Is it debug?
I think I have to look.
Because we typically don't run our log files, and certainly on production instances.
Yeah. I mean, we don't use this log actually a lot because our log file is very small.
I never understood what that switch was for. So
yeah,
that,
I mean,
if
you
have hidden,
if you think where you get say a couple of hundred logs.
Yeah.
Entries per second,
yes.
You're not keen on adding more than this. And it's always a problem that once it has reached a certain size, developers start taking care about this. Also, they are logging afterwards more actively. And the worst thing is if somebody logs simply a line like, okay, you have not. It takes you a while until you figure out which module, for what reason, writes here okay. And therefore, it is worth certainly a certain practice to say every developer should have a prefix on this,
mm-hmm.
and you should also have a rule, for example, saying this is coming from this component or whatever, and also say this is, let's say, just a temporary entry and remove this one, it's getting from development into production, and just kind of things. But this is just a documentation where you can maybe hand to developers and say behave better, but the system can't really do much on this. It's also possible to give every person a different log level, a different severity.
Mm.
You can have afterwards, we say log level Antonio and log level Günther,
mm.
and then the people only activate their own log levels and they don't see the other ones. Maybe they are not interested in this. Therefore, there's certainly, I think, a limit on the number of log levels we have currently, which is, I think it's just bits in the 64 bit. That means we have the 64 log levels currently. We might be able to extend this.
Now that we're talking about logging, I have another wish. I asked Gemini, and Gemini only gave me one solution that I will say what it is. We have the access log and we have the NSD log.
Yeah.
And the access log has some options where I can say I do a log rotation every day.
Yeah.
It's just fine. But the NSD log does not have these features. I think I asked you.
It's the same features. But you.
I didn't see the config options for the NSD file. The only way I found was to make a cron job on the system and send a ckup to the server, and there was a config option that ckup would rotate the NSD file.
The log is, since how many you don't know, and we have per day access log, and we have per day. I mean, there are different options how do you log it,
yeah?
I mean, there's a thing where I think it just logs after a certain size, and I think where you can specify a date. And if you have a date logging, and activate a date logging on both, on the system log and on the access log, then you get the sync updates there. But if you have one of these logs, they are simply the numbered versions, and then it doesn't sync.
My intention was getting the rotation always at midnight. That was my intention, and the only way I found to do it was sending the ckup regularly. Gemini suggested doing the ckup in a scheduled task from within Navi server, but I decided to make a console for it.
I think it does it, because it does it for us so many years ever. I have to look it up, what might be the problem.
Maybe it's just an oversight on my side.
Okay, I mean, there's another thing which is certainly the area of generative AI. I mean, in some ways, things like whatever Navi server or even OpenCS is a very nice, let's say, add-on.
Sorry, it's hard to hear. You move a bit, it's hard to follow.
I mean, it's a good, let's say, complementary service to what, let's say, large language models provide. Because, I mean, in things like whatever OpenCS, we have the users, we have groups, we have, we can more or less limit some kind of access to certain resources which can go into the LLM and give access to the thing based on user role and other things. And, actually, Antonio has provided a solution there in, I think it was the last year, on how to use this. And therefore, it's something where we can only think what can do AI for us. I mean, in a way, it might be very useful for improving the content or discussions, as, for example, John was presenting in a very nice way. OpenAI can help us to improve the documentation. I mean, for especially OpenCS, I think there was a lot of room for improvement. Many of the documentation is older than I have used OpenCS, and which is also a very long time ago. And there's, I mean, I'm using generative AI as a non-native English speaker, for example, for tasks requiring English speech, English skills, for example, commit messages. I love the commit messages, which you provide a diff file to an LLM, and it provides you a readable thing what changed there, and it might be correct or not. And you can, but you have a version which with the right wording. I do it also for function commands. If I rewrite function, no matter whether this is in most languages in C, and also many of the function commands are outdated. People are changing over the years the code, and they forget to update the commands. Therefore, getting things in sync again is very useful. I mean, there are many ways of using this, and the question is, do our users, do you actually want to have their, let's say, better access? How to do this? And I think also John Shadusen might be a good boilerplate how one can use some kind of an AI platform or AI interface there to different LLMs, and the application developer can divide afterwards for what kind of packages you want to have what AI support. I mean, I'm not saying that it has to be at every place, but it is the responsibility of the application developer to say, I want to use it here or there or other places. But I mean, at the end, the question is, it's always the same thing, reduce the glue code. How can we do this, let's say, easier, and how to deal with this on the longer range? I mean, probably all of you have some kind of experience there, and I mean, if there are, let's say, wishes, or you say, we have already enough there. I mean, with this built-in, whatever, starting with, let's say, streaming, also NSHTTP requests, where you can get streaming responses as they're coming, also from other websites via HTTP. It helps already a lot. It also helps to use JSON interfaces there for getting the data back and forth and interpreting it. Is there something, I mean, key management, I mean, not sure how to deal with this in the best way. I mean, NavServer can't do actually much about this because, but OpenCS can do something here. I mean, you can say, provide keys on the package level, or, I mean, it's not so easy to say what's the right thing. What's your feeling? Do you have some kind of, let's say,
blood
best
samples.
Practices, what?
Blood samples.
What's up?
Start on Navi, you got to inject, that's why you got Google and Co. trying to introduce passkeys. That's supposedly be able to fix the passwords and bringing in passkeys. Now, whether or not that will ever launch off is another issue. I have my own views on it, but I guess that could be used as a storage mechanism, as a way to eliminate passwords, but again, that adds a matter because if you haven't got your iPhone on you, you need to restart your server. How would you do that? So, it's again, that is the million-dollar question which no one's ever cracked. And yeah, 50 years later, we're still using passwords. So,
I mean, also, I mean, using keys is, I think, where to go for questions. The question is how to manage this. And
PGP, I mean, every server has open SSL. You can generate a certificate, shove it into a GPT, and then you've got a central repository that can be synced across anywhere. So that way you're giving authentication that this server is running on this host. It's why self-signed certificates make so much sense, but then again, that's my opinion.
We are experimenting a little bit with N off of M encryption. So you have kind of the encrypted keys on the server, one part on the server, and two other servers for free, remote, and three out of four gives you the secret. But they just experimenting. But that's, for me, that's some external stuff. That's not inside. I have not seen it as part of the Directory of Navi server.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just one of those flawed things in IT, unfortunately. It's up to the admins to keep control of it.
Yeah. I mean, the situation with OpenSSL is more complicated because you have many admins. I mean, at the end, every teacher is the admin of his own place, and you can say, I want to use this or that or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And, but maybe it's also an idea to have a small package, let's say, in multiple package in OpenSSL, which simply does nothing more than providing a key, and you can provide this, you can mount this package in different communities, and the problem is solved, actually.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is a low level, let's say, idea for OpenSSL, yeah?
Packaging is another keyword that triggered now something. It's about the packages that are either on SourceForge and or GitHub.
It's the same number of packages on both.
Yeah, the same number of packages, but my last experience was that the package that I could download from GitHub expected me to run the autoconfigure myself and maybe other preparation stuff. Whereas the variant from SourceForge was already just configured, made, and go. Some medium, not dependent files are shipped with the SourceForge, but not with the other one.
Yeah. I mean, this the classical philosophy, which I have not changed from the other server, was you have two options. You get something which is completely, let's say, runnable as admin with all of the generated content.
Mm-hmm.
Generated content means generated configure files for certain operating system, everywhere, and generated documentation, and more or less things we were generated from the sources. And the source is just the source. It's just you have to produce your own, let's say, configure file for your environment and get the right thing. And this is one level. And therefore, Navi server itself, the main module, you get different things on the Navi server main module. From SourceForge and from but it's part of the documentation. It's written in the README file. You have two options, and you can do this or that. And I think it's okay. But the other thing, which is read out from you, I think is the situation with the modules. We have many modules, and there's we don't have version numbers currently on the modules.
But that was not my question. Modules are not my focus. It might be a topic for others, but not for me. My question was that when I read the latest mail, okay, 5.1 is out, then there were just two links, and there was no mention about the fact that, well, those who don't want to run autoconfigure themselves rather should pick the one from there. I think that could be added as a hint to the release mails. That was
okay.
It may be self-explanatory for all old ages, but for the viewers, this is one thing that goes not.
Point of the README file is certainly not a bad idea.
Maybe in some README files, but they are not.
GitHub shows you the first place, the README file actually, but it's under a long list of files, maybe people don't scroll down.
Maybe it's just, well, for me it was trial and error, as I picked the one from GitHub, so okay, it would need to run the other things, okay, let's try the other one. So it was not a big deal, but I think maybe it's just too bad. So with configure included and airs or something.
Okay.
Just
okay.
A few keywords.
Good. Yeah. Something.
Yeah, I think it is time.
I think we have.
Yeah. So it is time for the organization committee to say thank you. And perhaps also thank you to the weather because you know, stay a bit longer.